You're listening to a recording of the Open Society Foundations, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
I'm Bob Patricelli, and I have a very paternal feeling about this evening. And I'm just so very pleased to see you all here this evening and help and to thank you for helping us take our show on the road, as it were. A special thanks to the Open Society Foundation, Sean Dove, where's Sean, for hosting us this evening. That was terrific. I don't see you, Sean. Where are you? Hiding. And thanks also to Wesleyan itself for sending such a great delegation down, headed by our president, Michael Roth, and Barbara Jan Wilson, and all the others who made this evening possible. And then finally, in the thanks department, a special thanks to Sarah Williams and Lara Galinsky from the Patricelli Center's advisory board. And they are the co-chairs of our advisory board and are really the moving forces behind this evening, and other members of the advisory board who are here tonight. So thank you, one and all. I've been asked to make a few opening remarks, and it'll be just a few. And let me tell you what I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you what a social entrepreneur is, because many of you live that and know a lot more about it than I do. And everybody in this room is populating that term with their own experience and their own vision and passion. And I'm not going to tell you what the Patricelli Center does and what it should do, because it's still a mostly empty vessel. And events like tonight are going to pour water in that vessel, and they're going to give it meaning, and they're going to give it definition and program ideas and outreach and connections and network. And so you're here tonight not just to passively listen, but to help populate the vision of what this center could be at Wesleyan. I will say a word about how the center got started. And it was a matter of some serendipity. My wife and I give a scholarship to a needy international student every year. And I think Ann Bergen called me one day and said, come down and meet your new scholarship student. And it was Kennedy Odede. Now, Barbara Jan was very smart about that. And of course, we were completely captured by Kennedy and his vision and his passion. And then soon, very soon, by his colleague and now wife, Jessica Posner Odede. And after exposure to them for a year or two, I started scratching my head and saying to Michael and others, wow, if Kennedy can incubate and support and maybe even help produce two such people, couldn't we thoughtfully do 10 or 20 or 30 or 50 such people? Couldn't we institutionalize in some way and give a framework to the social entrepreneurism that's been part of the DNA of Wesleyan for so long? Social betterment, change the world for the better, whatever you want to call it. Back in the 60s when I went to Wesleyan, we were still trying it. We'd never heard of a social entrepreneur. It's been in the DNA forever. But how is it possible it was never given a home? It was never institutionalized. It was never taught. It was never supported. Never any courses, any grants, any internships. There was no alumni network. We just did it. And it was time to do it thoughtfully. There's another element to this that I think is very important, and you'll feel it tonight, and you are part of it tonight. It is a way for Wesleyan to reconnect with its alumni body in a powerful way, and it's a way for all of us who care about this broad subject to connect with one another. Kennedy always describes Shining Hope for Communities as not a program, but as a movement. This activity can make Wesleyan a movement. And working together, Wesleyan's alumni who are involved in these activities all around the country and all around the world can be a movement for making the world a better place. So I think this center has an enormous outreach opportunity, quite apart from what it gives to the current generations of students. Finally, let me say I have to ask your indulgence and your forgiveness for attaching my name to it. And I am a little bit embarrassed, especially because it's such a long name. But you know, in a way, no one has the right to attach his or her name to something that is so quintessentially Wesleyan and so important and so preceded, in this case, me. So that's to say, if you give a big enough gift tonight, you can have the name. Barbara Jan only gives names, you know, for a limited period of time. She'll resell whatever whatever instant.
It's going to turn into an auction.
So with that, it's my pleasure to introduce the 16th president of Wesleyan University. And boy, have we got a winner in Michael Waroth. He has got quintessential academic credentials. Most of you know he graduated summa cum laude from Wesleyan in 3 years, and he was just getting started. Got his PhD at Princeton, taught at prestigious schools for about 10 years, went to the Getty Research Organization in California, where he created programs and ran programs, and then took over as president of the California Center for the Arts. Now, like me, you probably never heard of the California Center for the Arts, and when Michael was chosen, I remember, at the risk of embarrassing you, Michael, I remember asking one of the members of the search committee, why'd you pick him? And the answer was, we had some terrific qualified candidates, but one individual really captured the imagination of the committee. And we thought he was high risk, but he'd be high reward. And Michael, you are delivering on the reward. Thank you.
High risk Roth, they call me. High risk Roth. So there are a couple of, just to minimize my own liability, a couple of trustees here. There's Ellen Jewett here, Phoebe Boyer, Irma Gonzalez. Always good to have the trustees here. So thank you for coming. It reminds me of the search process. It's a long time ago already. This is my sixth year at Wesleyan. People keep bringing up, how did they choose that guy? Bad sign. It's a bad sign. Hi, Jane. Nice to see you. And I remember at one of the meetings with the search committee, a very distinguished group. None of them knew the California College of the Arts. Actually, it's true. None of them knew it. They were much more impressed by the Getty, which shows you something about the orientation towards wealth rather than creativity.
So, President Roth.
Yes. Am I in your way?
No. Speaking of creativity, we are podcasting this event.
Oh, so I need to stand
so,
still?
Yeah, you didn't get the... Well, you can jump...
Nobody told me that.
You can jump up and down. Just stay at the mic.
Nobody told me that. Now you tell me, after I make that crack about the trustees, you tell me you're podcasting? If you could tell me that before, I would have said something nicer. All right, so just to cut the story a little shorter, committee, after they decided to offer me the job, I guess, someone said, have you been in the president's office at Wesleyan? It's really beautiful. And I said, yes, I slept under the table, actually, in 1977. And of course, I thought they would have been dismayed to be hiring as president someone who had occupied the office illegally in the 1970s. And they were like, oh, yeah, all of us probably slept there at various times. When I came as president, one of the seven things, really, we were focused on in the last 5 years was civic engagement, was politics. And instead of thinking about Wesleyan as the Wesleyan Project as being better than Bowdoin, which is, you know, just move up the rankings, I thought we should actually be quite proud of our weird reputation. We should be very proud that people think of us as a politically active, aggressive university. We should be very proud that people think of us as an artsy place, which usually is code for something else. And we should say, yeah, damn straight. We are an artsy place. We're a place for entrepreneurs. We're a place for artists. We're a place for activists. Rather self-servingly, I said, it's really not appropriate to direct all that energy to campus protests. You should take that out towards the world in a bigger way. Of course, students don't listen to that advice. But we have tried, and Rob Rosenthal, who couldn't be here tonight because he's actually hosting a political fundraiser, Rob Rosenthal has spearheaded our efforts to bring civic engagement into the curriculum in a thoroughgoing way. So that it's not just an accident that the student culture at Wesleyan creates the extraordinary group of social entrepreneurs, activists, leaders, participants in movements for progressive social change, that it is a purposeful activity of the university that we take pride in, that we support, and that we celebrate. And I am so glad that two of the major initiatives of the last few years have come to fruition. One is the All Britain Center for the Study of Public Life and the Patricelli Center for Social Entrepreneurship, both of which tap into our desire to understand social change more deeply, but not to just understand it as spectators, to participate in social change in an informed, in a sustainable, and in a, dare I say, radical way, that is to think about social change as something that has to happen from the roots. The panel today is a distinguished group of well-weathered social entrepreneurs, activists who've been doing this for quite a while. And I'm not going to introduce you to them to you because we have a video that will show you something about the work of each. So I'm afraid you will have to move to those chairs. It seems like the dating game or something. And then we'll have a curtain, and there'll be funders behind here. No, you sit there. Funder number one. What's your favorite ice cream? No, nope, there we go. This is not really Bing podcast, is it?
Black men and boys are at the bottom or near bottom of every indicator of success.
Echoing Green was really excited and honored to partner with Open Society Foundation's Black Male Achievement.
We have launched the first ever national fellowship focusing on black male achievement. We've made history.
The moment I realized that I needed to help was when, as an educator, I thought about how so many black boys grow up with this preponderance of negative black male imagery.
Years ago, my father told me to find a need in my community and address that need in a unique way.
My moment of obligation started when I came to this country as an immigrant.
I was able to see how resources, when leveraged, could actually level the field. That, for me, was just magic.
What I'm interested in is creating a social enterprise that will be directly responsible for the employment of black men.
We're harnessing the power of the NBA. And we're bringing it into the classroom and using it as a hook.
We have student-owned and operated businesses. And part of the students actually running and owning the businesses is to create entrepreneurial thinking.
These young black men are being overlooked. We really need to empower them and give them leadership opportunities.
It occurred to me that we had to find ways to tell the story of black male success and to get those stories in front of black boys.
There is often a sense of hopelessness. What's needed is hope and belief that we can make a change and to keep fighting, making lasting change.
The situation is in the Congo, the war is going on up to now.
Since January 2001, I'm not seeing my wife. The first day to me to see my wife again is today.
When the war broke out in the Congo, Christine's husband was out of the country and he was denied re-entry. She and her sons went to go live in a missionary. One day when Christine went to get water in the local river, she was kidnapped, and during that time she was treated brutally and suffered a lot of physical injuries that will never be repaired.
I really don't remember that much. To think that something bad is going on and something like very difficult is going through my life right now. I was just young and, you know, I was just living through it.
On 2004, November, they came to tell me, your wife, she's dead. And I have the letter, official letter. My wife, she's dead.
When Christine was in the hospital recovering, a local newspaper ran a story about what happened in the Congo, and they featured Jonathan and his sons, and it ran in the paper. Someone that Christine knew saw it and brought it back to the Congo and showed it to her.
When I was in Congo, without knowing where my family was, I had that hope that one day I will be with them.
You see now today, my wife should be here together to live with me. So I'm very, very, very happy for that.
Remembering all the back memory, it's kind of like flashback pictures come into your mind, and you're looking at what has happened before what is about happening now, and you can't believe it.
Emotional also, I cried, but the tears was the tear of joy. I really, really thank people because they show me their love. Since I was with them up to here to United States, these people really, really helped me a lot when I was in Kenya. They are very close with people who are going through their organization. And when I found my husband and my children, that was like, oh, I have no word to say. That was amazing.
Listen up. You can be anything in the world. You only must realize that it ain't no guarantee. Nothing's in the way of what you wanna be. So follow your dreams, always shoot for the stars. No matter which direction, you'll be sure to go far. This is our first step as we get an education. This nation won't stop us from the push of limitation. Today we learn to write and dream. Someday we bloom as flowers, now we plant the seed. You will not be surprised, they can do anything. Though only 6 and 7, they can show you how. Someday they'll look back and say, that was then and this is now.
I know I can be what I wanna be.
If I work hard enough, I'll be where I wanna be.
Hey, what's up? This is Kennedy. Proud to be part of the community. The better school for girls, yeah, I believe. If we band together, we can achieve anything and everything with education. One day you will be part of the nation. Life is hard, but we'll get through. I have so much hope and in all of you. Let's say it together. We believe in shining hope for communities to change the world. If there's a will, there's a way. Let's all hold hands because the future starts today. I do what I can.
I know I can.
Be where I wanna be.
Be where I wanna be.
If I work out on it.
If I work out on it.
I'll be where I wanna be.
I'll be where I wanna be.
Yo, Kibera, tuko pamoja.
Back panelists, please. So I thought we would start off, and maybe Sean, you can start us off by just saying a couple of words about how the work you do fits into this field of social entrepreneurship.
Sure, and. Welcome, everyone. My name is Sean Dove, and I manage Open Society Foundation's campaign for Black Male Achievement that was launched here at the Open Society Foundation about 4.5 years ago to really respond to the growing crisis that America is facing with its black men and boys. When we look at mass incarceration, education, health disparities, and so. I think the what we've done with the campaign for Black Male Achievement and this work, I have come to the conclusion that America and philanthropy does not need another campaign for Black Male Achievement, does not need another initiative for Black Male Achievement, because often in philanthropy, we take a look at generational issues and generational problems, and we approach it with a grant cycle mentality. And so this was initially a 3-year initiative. And so we were scaled up beyond the 3 years, but I've come to the conclusion that philanthropy, America, really needs not a campaign for Black Male Achievement, a corporation for Black Male Achievement.
Is that where the entrepreneurship comes in?
That's where this entrepreneurship comes in. And so the vision, and so we've begun to lay the groundwork for that. You saw some of the partnerships that we have with the Equin Green. And so I think the idea and the bold statement that we need in America an endowed social enterprise mm-hmm. that can address this issue over the long term. Mm-hmm.
Sasha, how about you? How did you come to start Refuge Point, and how do you see it fitting into the field these days?
Thanks, and it's so wonderful to be here, because 8 years ago when I was starting Refuge Point, I thought I need to connect with the Wesleyan community, and now through the Patricelli Center, I can. Wesleyan felt like home then, it feels like home now, and so this is such a wonderful opportunity. Thank you. Briefly, I think Sean highlighted a moment of obligation. Hmm. For me, that moment of obligation actually took place when I was part of a U.S.-funded rescue team that was sent into the Congo to evacuate people who were being massacred there. This was after the Rwandan genocide, and the U.S., I think, over guilt about Rwanda, launched a series of rescue operations. I was sent in as the last team to go in and take out a group of 112 people that had been approved for departure. Congo was at war and people were being massacred, but the government had said, you can take these people out to find a new life in another country. When my colleagues and I arrived in In a center, a safe haven, where people who were under attack had gathered. We found all those people on our list, and we also found a group of widows and orphans who were not on our list. And we had been explicitly told not to take anybody else at risk of losing everybody. And we were faced with an urgent moral dilemma. Do we risk the lives of all the people we know we can get out in order to save a few more, or do we risk, or do we let the few die to save many? My colleague and I called our boss and we said, we have to try to take these additional people out, and we were told firmly, you cannot. And we talked about it more and decided that we had to try. These widows and orphans had been in a prison camp where many of them had watched their family members die and be executed. We managed to get all those people out. And that experience for me highlighted the fact that there are many people out there, refugees who fled violence and persecution, who are in life-threatening situations and have nowhere to turn for help, and steered me on the course of starting an organization that would work with governments and the UN to find those people who are most at risk and get them to places of safety. And we've built an organization that can do that and can work with governments, the UN, and other NGOs to build safety nets in places where there are none for people who are in life-threatening jeopardy.
How big is the organization now?
Well, we started about 8 years ago with nothing. Now we have about 40 staff working in a lot of the hotspots in Africa, and the budget's almost $2.5 million. So we've grown very quickly, thanks to Echo and Green and support from a lot of people.
Thank you. Jessica, why don't you go first, and I'll ask Kennedy a different question. Tell us a little bit about how you entered this field. I mean, it wasn't, it probably didn't seem like a field when you entered it. You were going abroad, right, as a student.
Well, thank you. I'm so happy to be here, too. I mean, Wesleyan played a really integral part in my wanting, as a junior, to just see something different of the world. I grew up in Denver, went to Wesleyan, and felt like I just didn't know what was out there. And Wesleyan had really taught me something that I think is really central to how I see social entrepreneurship, but that I needed to know more about myself so that I could see how I fit into this world and what kind of partnerships I could leverage, which I think is so important in this space. And so I went to Nairobi, met Kennedy pretty soon thereafter, and saw what he was doing in Kibera. I first went and was interested in theater and how working with art could actually change attitudes and talk about difficult issues. So Kennedy and I started doing theater in the middle of the streets of Kibera about gender violence, about HIV, about all of these really challenging issues. And then Kennedy told me that his dream was to get an education. And so I said, well, you should come to Wesleyan. So after a lot of people in this room and other places helped make that possible, we really started talking about what we could do that would change this community. So we started Shining Hope for Communities 3 years ago. I was a senior, Kennedy was a freshman at Wesleyan, and grew the organization over the past 3 years to whereas now what we do is we built the first free school for girls. You saw our students. And what we've done is we're developing a model where we connect a free school for girls to social services that are open to the entire community. The idea being that by providing high-value services, we change the perspective of the community about women and girls. And so we run a health clinic, we have clean water, community centers, and that will serve 35,000 people this year with 110 staff members, which has been a really exciting progress. And I think for me, it really became about learning what the world looked like and learning more about myself. And I feel like for the future of social innovation is partnerships that come from a knowledge of where we are. And that's really been my story.
Thank you. Kennedy, you started this work pre-Wesleyan, I have to admit. You were doing community organizing and actively engaged in trying to create structures that would improve lives for people in Kibera. Now that you have been doing this for several years, and in the last three in a kind of international arena where there are panels like this one, and there are discussions with major foundations and with former presidents, how do you see the... How would you describe the difference between the work you were doing with the soccer ball when you were first organizing soccer teams in the neighborhood to how you see the field now that you're navigating it in this international context.
Well, thank you so much, President. So I want to say that it's social entrepreneurship is about you see something and you want to fill the gap, you know? So I saw this kind of poverty that I grew up in, and I had no other way out. It was in Kenya, whereby if you're born poor, you know, your life is like that, you know? So, but I was really had no much how to process my ideas by that time. I have to be honest, I was an informal guy. I grew up informal. Then, although I worked, they called me mayor in Kibera, but my work was not known internationally. So why was that? The lack of education, you know? So when I met Jessica and was able to come to the US, first of all, let's talk about Wesleyan, is that if you can't write well, you're not from Wesleyan. That's a fact. You know? You know, so being at Wesleyan, I was also able to see a big picture. And for example, right now, I was in Kibera, but right now I see bigger than Kibera. So I want to turn urban poverty into an urban promise. Why? So right now, as people come up to the villages, in Nairobi now there's what's called promising, a city of promise. Everyone is trying to come to look for jobs. Then they end up there, slums, like Kibera, Mathare, you know? So how do we turn that into the promise? You get? Yeah, so Wesleyan has been my milestone. That's where I can say that the fire has exploded. Because from Wesleyan, we have seen many... Wesleyan, I did sociology, but you can see what I'm doing now. You know about Marjorie Carter, what she has been doing? You can't believe that she majored into film. You see? So Wesleyan is a place where they create ideas, and I was able to meet different people and able to build this organization, which I give my credit to the Wesleyan University. And right now, through Wesleyan Network, I'm able to be a member of Equin Green. You see? Yeah.
Well, talk a little bit about scale. I mean, all of you have described a process where there's this moment of obligation, a feeling that, as Sasha said, is a kind of this crucible moment where you have to make a life and death decision. And there's a kind of intensity and directness to that. And then there's the personnel, building staff, raising money, which and scaling up from that urge to do the right thing to the long work of building an organization that's going to last and have an impact on lots of people. How have you navigated the scaling up? Anybody who would want to talk to that?
Well, I would just venture to say that while starting an organization is not for everyone, and there's this notion of social entrepreneurship and why we are here, but I think there's also this notion of social entrepreneurship and being in dynamic organizations and having leadership in those organizations that give creative leaders the room to incubate ideas. And throughout my career, I've been blessed to be in such organizations where you're able to launch, incubate, scale in a safe environment, and then go out and launch that. So I was able to do that on a number of occasions in startups within the Harlem Children's Zone. And so right. I think it's really important for people that are listening that don't need to feel the need to go out and start an organization.
Right.
And finding the right place to incubate it.
I think that scale happens in different ways at different points. With us, we deal in the refugee sector. There are about 15 million refugees worldwide. What many people don't know is that once you flee your country, you're stuck as a refugee for an average of 17 years. You're not going home.
And many of the people who do flee actually find themselves in danger where they end up. So we found that when you can't go home and you can't stay safely where you are, you can relocate to another country. And growing around the world is a movement by governments to bring refugees in so that they can permanently relocate to new countries. We found that the governments and the UN were the two entities occupied in that space, and yet the whole system was ineffective and didn't work very well. In the past decade, about 200,000 slots, resettlement slots, to the U.S. alone have gone unfilled.
Because 200,000?
200,000. And when I worked across Africa and saw people in life-threatening jeopardy and thought, why is this? What we aimed to do was to create mechanisms to identify people, to build an organization, but also to train and teach other organizations to do this. So in every country in the world, we can have organizations who can be the eyes and the ears for looking out for those people who have no other options for survival. And we've seen a dramatic expansion of that idea and an acceptance of that idea within governments and the UN to expand it and increase it. And what that has meant is more safety for more people like Christine.
Right.
And just to follow up on that video that you saw, when she got to the U.S., I talked to her a couple of weeks later. She said, yeah, my sons play soccer, and now I had all the soccer team over for dinner, and now I'm a soccer mom. And just seeing where she came from, where she had no place to go for survival, to a place where she could reunite with her family and then build a new life, that's what we strive and strive to create a better network in the world to do that.
It sounds like that network is, or creating that network is a kind of educational mission to make other organizations aware of this problem and also what potential solutions.
Yeah, it's certainly both based in hands on the ground or boots on the ground so you can show that what you're doing is effective, and then using the lessons to impart those to others so they can follow your lead.
Jessica, you wanted to jump in here?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, well, these are conversations we're having every day at Shining Hope. And something that's really rung true for us is this kind of duality of scale, but also keeping grassroots leadership. And that sort of is what I think has made our work so effective. And so as Kennedy said, we're looking at growing and sort of at taking on this problem of urban poverty at a much larger scale, but making sure we're putting the mechanisms in place so that local communities and people like Kennedy are able to really continue to define their own solutions.
Yeah, I have a different idea in terms of scalability. I always think in terms of impact, and I've been telling a lot of that too. So the idea is that when you think about impact, you think in a bigger picture. For example, in my life in Kibera, I really didn't know anything about the outside world. What I wanted to do is to make a better place for my community in this small Kibera area. That's what I knew. I had nothing beyond that. Then there's something that the impact started growing. Right now we have served over 35,000 people. And then you get a phone call. I got a phone call in Kenya from another slum called Madari that we heard about what you are doing. We read the newspaper. How can we have the same thing like this year? You know. So what I really focus on is what you call organic growth. And when you're starting something, you have to be focused. Why are you starting it? And if you think about just growing, you are losing focus. You are losing the grassroots part of it. So I really follow up what's called impact, because you can have a big scalability with zero impact. Yes, it happened. So what happened, what I follow is called organic growth. It happened itself. Now we are going to Madari. It was a hard time with my board. But it really happens organically and much more easier. So I also believe in scalability that's happened organically.
That's really interesting, this notion of two things I want to call out. One is this boots on the ground and lessons learned. I mean, that really resonates for me with what the Patricelli Center is trying to achieve. That is, we have lots of students whose boots are on the ground and they're wanting to be on more than one ground at a time, and they're running from action to action. And that energy, that vitality, even I can say call it an urgency in student concerns is as great at Wesleyan today as it ever was. And what we're hoping is to take that energy and the hard work. It's not just energy. It's boots on the ground means you're actually doing something. You're walking somewhere. and combine it with lessons learned so as to create more capacity, not just from the energy of one or two people, but from a network of students and alumni and other people who share those values and who want to create change. And I do think the organic growth issue is also a very important one for us at Wesleyan, because we have had this energy for a long time. And you know, I don't know if it would be true at other schools. A lot of parents tell me when they go to Wesleyan alumni events, they're amazed at how critical people are of the school alumni. And I always say, really? They seem like normal to me. That's just the way we are. And they said, no. At other schools, the people who show up at alumni events are actually, they're just so happy that the football team is undefeated that they don't even ask you about other things. Thank you. It's true. It is. Nobody else believed it. But yes, it's true. And so they don't care about other things.
It's a
but,
brief moment in time.
But at Wesleyan, there is this sense that we want to do more, and we want to actually show that the energy that we remember from our student time and the vitality that we know is there among the students today is actually taking form in high-impact practices. But we actually have to do that through organic growth. We have to do that through an organization, and the Patricelli Center is that organization, that will bring together organically the energy and the lessons learned so that our students can, to use this word, leverage the energies they have, not dissipate them. Learn certainly by failing. Learn by making the mistakes that at least I made and a lot of my friends made. But to do so with a higher chance of success because you're wrapped in a network that cares about the issues you care about, and has the progressive values and the energy to implement them that Wesleyan has been long known for. I want to ask you before we turn the floor for questions. What would you tell Wesleyan students today? I mean, if students that who are interested in progressive social change, in making a difference in their neighborhoods or around the world, and are looking for ways to do so, what would you, if you had one or two things that you want them to be mindful of, what would those things be?
Well, I would start off, and Jessica mentioned this earlier, is discover who you are and identify your passion and your purpose for being here, number one. Number two, I would say get comfortable with failing and being able to take your stumbling blocks and turn them into stepping stones. The social capital at Wesleyan, network at Wesleyan was just phenomenal. And that for me and my experience, and I just have to share that 2 weeks on campus, I found myself in Meriden, Connecticut, protesting against the Ku Klux Klan. And my mother was like, I didn't send you up there to do that. But that was an example of the spirit of Wesleyan. And I would say that you will learn so much, or just as much, outside of the lecture hall and the classroom and through the relationships. And the last thing I would say, and there's many more, but I would say certainly connect and find mentors. And the power of that while you're on campus and outside, and just be open, because you never know who will be that person in your class from another race, ethnicity, that will be the person that connects you along your social entrepreneurial path.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Those are wonderful. I went to the Patricelli Center and spoke there earlier this year, and was struck and impressed and blown away by the intelligence and the brilliance of students there, who are so creative. And I think that defines Wesleyan a lot. It's not just brilliance, but it's a kind of particular characteristic of creative brilliance. And I feel like the Patricelli Center is a place that taps into that nerve of creative brilliance and helps to nurture and support it. And for me, seeing how eager the students were to discuss their ideas and what they were doing, I would say reach out to this network. This is a growing network. And you know, when I think of my experience at Wesleyan, I think each of us here can close your eyes and think back to some really meaningful moment that you had in Wesleyan. that maybe a new idea that you discovered or a time with friends. If you think just for a moment about that, a time at Wesleyan that struck you personally, that helped to lead you on a path in your life. I think back to many of those moments at Wesleyan, to the creativity that was embodied in the students and my friends there. But I think that this center can help to capture that. And many of the students that are going there now can find those moments within the center and within the community that we're bringing together at the center. And so that's not a direct answer to your question.
No, that's a great answer.
For me, it's I am so moved that this is happening and that we have an opportunity to engage the intellect and to support the students who are there now so that we can see many more Jessicas and Kennedys and others who can increase this collective, incredible impact on the world. And I'm just so excited and thrilled to be a part of that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, I think I would say that for people who want to make change in the world, that when you have an idea and you're going out to make that idea actually a reality, something that's been really important to us and that I think is important to this field is accountability. And that when you have an idea and you want to make a change, that you actually hold yourself accountable for moving the needle on that, and that you're measuring that, and that you're being honest with yourself and your organization about what's working and what's not. And then once you see what's working, I think that Wesleyan students, we talked about this a bit earlier, but we're very impatient and that we want to see huge, you know, 10 years of change happen in a month. And that I think the real systemic change is going to take time. And so one of our great mentors always tells us to be patient, but with a sense of urgency. And so I think that's a really good piece of advice. And the last thing is to create a community. That's really what has been the most rewarding part of Shining Hope for me, is that it's a movement, as Kennedy says. It's a community of people, from people we went to school with, to our professors, to people, everyone. There are so many people in this room who are part of the Wesleyan community and have really played an integral role in what we're doing and how we think of ourselves as leaders. And so I think that you can't do it alone, that we really need to come together. And I think that is the excitement of the Patricelli Center, is that there's a movement of social entrepreneurs that we're all somehow contributing to.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think if you're a student at Wesleyan, we are really lucky, and I really feel humble and to be part of Wesleyan. We have everything at Wesleyan, you know? So what you have to do, I think, is follow your heart and be critical of your ideas, you know? And that's how, you know, you have to, don't just jump into things. Why do you want to do that thing? What makes you? Sasha went to Africa. He was connected to it. Jessica, the same. Sean, who was just an English major, you see what I was doing, you know? So it's about it's about following your heart. And we are so lucky that it's organically the right time that we have the Patricelli Center. That's a hub whereby we'll be able to be connected with people with the same ideas. So, and I think right now, with the years to come, we're going to be really far. It was really hard for us, to be honest, to look for Sasha, to have to call him. There was no organized. But Patricelli Center, don't be too organized too. Because Wesleyan, we are more informal.
Don't worry.
Yeah. So I think you're going to the right direction. And yes, thank you.
So,
and I just wanted to add just one thing to that. And thanks for creating the Patricelli Center for Social Entrepreneurship on campus. And we were talking about this earlier, that there is a connection with so many alums, and not just students on campus.
Absolutely.
That are in the field and want to connect, are potential mentors, potential donors, and then there are individuals that may be in a sector that has nothing to do with social change, but may be looking for a way to donate their time, their talent, their treasure, and the center can be this place where we're attracting this vast Wesleyan resource to advance the mission of the center. So definitely look at that.
It's really important that not everybody who is attracted to the Patricelli Center for Social Entrepreneurship will be starting an organization. These guys made this point in our little pre-meeting that it'll be a magnet for people who want to support this kind of work, people who may be doing something quite different, but who are attracted to the work, to the impact it has, to the accountability of the practitioners, and that will only grow over time. I like this phrase, an organic way rather than a hyper-organized way. And if you haven't seen it yet, you should look at Kennedy Odette's graduation speech from May, where he had a little bit more time to give his advice to the class of 2012. But it's on the website, and it's a great speech. And if you don't deny yourself the pleasure, as one of my Wesleyan professors used to say to me, don't deny yourself the pleasure. Look at it when you have a chance. Yes, Mr. McCarthy. It's a great example. It's a great example of how the Patricelli Center is just the latest iteration of something that has been growing at Wesleyan for a long time. And it's really great that you mentioned WAPS and the work that many people like yourself have done over years now in linking together people in the alumni group who will make not just leverage their contacts in a crude way, but actually use those contacts to create a greater capacity to do the things that are going to make a difference. So we expect real synergies with what we're doing here. Yes.
So I'm going to ask if people can use the microphone. Because we're podcasting this event, right, Stephanie?
So I apologize. I'm not a Wesleyan graduate.
Turn it off.
But I'm very happy to say my son is a freshman at Wesleyan.
That counts.
So I've had three events, not at Wesleyan University, and ironically, three of those events, Kennedy's been the one who's welcomed me to the event.
Following you.
And our president is at two times of those events. So I think what's important for me is this community, which is new to me, but one that I find very invigorating, one that I want to support. And I guess my question to you is, first of all, congratulations on a great panel discussion, and congratulations on a group of people. What is it you want from us? What do you want us to do?
Okay, well, this is my brother from... we're going to talk more about that, but we want your support. We want your moral support. We want your intellectual support. We want to know that you think this work is vital to the... not just to the university, but it's vital because it makes a difference out in the world. And of course, since I am a university president, we want your money. We want your support, your financial support, to make this a successful enterprise for the long duration. And the doors are locked. Don't try to leave. we'll talk a little bit more about this. There's a real opportunity for supporting this enterprise now. It's young. We have the seed money, and we have generous support from the Patricelli family, and we have other avenues of support, but we need to hear from our alumni and our parents who believe in this kind of work and will help make it possible for our students through seed grants, through internships. We want our students to be able to take an internship here at the Soros, at the Open Society Foundations. We want them to be able to take those internships, even if there are no more paid internships left, that we can give those people the support they need to take an internship here or to do that research in education and poverty, or to connect to other alumni around the country to expand their education and make their idealism more effective. And the support for the center will help us do that. Then you'll be next. Go ahead, please.
I'm also not a Wesleyan grad, and my son's in the third grade, so. But
still
I
still hope for him.
Should we note down the name?
Yes. I'm going to put a good word in for you. So the question I have is really about domestic versus international. And I go to a lot of these convenings, and when you pull together the social entrepreneurs, almost always 90% of them are doing work outside of the United States. And I'm curious about whether or not you agree with that and how we foster the development of social entrepreneurs domestically that are thinking about low-income people in America and how we change that dynamic. And that when we ask about domestic social entrepreneurs, somebody doesn't mention TFA, right? No knock. My husband's a core member, or was a core member. But that's a 22-year-old organization. When you really think about it, that is not today. And so I wonder why that is happening, why we're able to foster Kennedys and Sarahs and send them away, and we can't really keep them here.
Great question. You want to speak to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, especially like in my generation, the world just feels a lot smaller, and that there's just such the power of the internet, of going abroad, of all these different ways that make things feel a lot more connected. That said, I mean, I would have never stayed in Kenya doing the work I did if it wasn't for the really personal connection that I made with this community and with Kennedy, and sort of seeing that really has what's been sustained it. But you know, I think there's a mix, but I think that it's really, I think successful social entrepreneurs, it's really about what speaks to you, and that for whatever reason you end up where you do. But it really does seem to me that the problems of the world that once seemed so far away, that they're in Africa, they're never going to affect us here, that just doesn't feel true to me. It feels like what happens around the world is inevitably tied to what happens here. Maybe not now, but in the next 5 or 10 years, I think that the issues are really interconnected.
I'm fortunate to be part of the Echo and Green Network as well as a few other social entrepreneur networks, and there are extraordinary individuals doing work right here in the U.S. For me, I'm also part of a growing network of philanthropists called New England International Donors, and I think if you use cell phones, use your computer, eat bananas, drink coffee, anything that you think about, wear the clothes you're wearing, these things connect us to the world and the global community. And when you see how people are living and surviving and trying to move forward with their lives in different parts of the world, I personally feel like we have an obligation, not just locally, but globally, because that we are a global community now. So just to emphasize some of what Jessica said.
And I'd just like to add that I'm really excited about what I'm seeing in philanthropy initiatives to identify homegrown, local, social entrepreneurs, individuals who would not necessarily call themselves entrepreneurs but are doing social entrepreneurial work. The Knight Foundation recently launched an effort called Be Me, Black Male Engagement, in a number of cities are funding local black men and boys that are doing social entrepreneurial work and giving them validation. Case Foundation has this Be Fearless campaign, right, where they're searching and identifying local social change agents. And so there was a time when this term social entrepreneurship did not exist, but we were still doing the work and practicing those principles. And so some of it, I think, is a perception versus reality issue, what's happening here locally and globally.
It's interesting. The the Knight Foundation, I should say, is run by a Wesleyan grad, but the and a great one. At the university, we think about this a lot and try to think about how, as a university, we can make a difference right in our own neighborhood. I mean, that's, you know, starting where we are. And so, as usual, the students are way out in front of us, and so hundreds of Wesleyan students are working in the local schools. Dozens of Wesleyan students are working in the local prison. We have programs that combine volunteerism in education with social justice work for people, low-income people, or issues of housing. My predecessor, along with many faculty members, Jonathan Cutler is here, Rob Rosenthal would love to be here. They helped start the Green Street Arts Center in the north end of Middletown, which provides now math and science education for elementary school kids. Probably 100 Wesleyan students are working at the Green Street Arts Center, which represented a significant investment by the university. And then, very simply, but not very easily, we've focused on what we can do as a university to create a better pipeline for Black and Hispanic students going on to graduate work in the sciences. We've really defined this narrowly, that is, work in the sciences. And we had a very inspirational talk from Freeman Hrabowski last year, and I have a group of skeptical scientists standing up and cheering, and Freeman said to me, you know, you can make a difference. Two or three students a year, Black or Hispanic students, going on to PhD programs in the sciences. Don't take medical school, he said. It's not good enough. It's got to be PhD programs in the sciences. And then you, Wesleyan, will be making a national contribution. So it's not the only contribution we should make, but that is something we should be able to do. We should be able to find out how to teach effectively, recruit effectively, and mentor people from underrepresented groups to go on to do advanced work in these fields. And we'll see. You know, we have 5 years, and we should see results. And I hope to be able to report back to you on that. John, you wanted to ask a question.
I'm having flashbacks of leaving MoCon and going to Foss Hill and having deep discussions, and then going to Malcolm X house and yelling and screaming. But I just wanted to say that I've been to a lot of Open Society Foundation events here, and they've all been great. But this I take a little pride in. There's always been a smattering of Wesleyan people here and there, but to have all these Wesleyan people here at one time is very impressive, so I take a little pride in that. My question is kind of going along the lines of more advice or more concrete things that we can do. The question is, you know, you're all kind of preaching to the choir, kind of, and we all have, you know, different organizations, different lines of work that we are doing and that we're involved with social entrepreneurship. Specifically, what do you guys could give us any kind of thing that you want us to do or that you think that we could do to bring about awareness and social awareness concretely? You know, we could donate money and stuff like that. That's concrete also. But I also want to talk about, you know, what do you think that we could do to bring in the masses?
I mean, one thing that just strikes me as really powerful is the power of mentorship, and a lot of people have said that, but of the resources in this room in terms of what people have experienced and have gone through, and I know that's something that's been invaluable to us, and I'm sure will continue to be invaluable to students at Wesleyan, and it seems like the center can serve as an exciting hub for that.
I'm a mentor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just can't say enough about the power of relationships and exposure and being able to invite students to your place of employment, lunch, to share your successes and, more importantly, your failure. So the relationship. Also, you had mentioned writing a check and being a resource that way. And then really spreading the word and just letting your network know, whether it's Wesleyan or outside of Wesleyan, that there is this amazing center and social entrepreneurship that is emerging on campus, and catching and helping other folks catch that fire and spreading the word about the center. I think that's what you can do very easily.
Yeah.
Do that, and I think one of the things that really interests me personally, and you know, Mike touched on this, is how do we engage more leaders of color on campus and off campus on this notion of social entrepreneurship, that it is not this a flighty concept that is unattainable or not for me. And doing that within your network as well.
Kennedy,
yeah. So We are talking about local and national, so I want to say something small about what we can do. I think, personally for me, it's something really touching. Growing up in Kibera, I didn't know anything about America. And then coming to Wesleyan, let's be honest, I was really, when I was coming to Wesleyan, I was scared because of how it's going to be. I'm this guy who never had informal education. And getting impressed and being part of that community. Then living out 2012 with something called Patricelli Center. So let's just put that connection together. So it was really, it will be really amazing if we can financially put support in that center, because it means a lot. And another thing that I really, we struggled, and yet we had people who have done amazing things before. I am not the first one. There were many, many beyond me, before I came to Wesleyan. But what happened is that idea that we can reconnect, we can have a center. When you came, Maria Carter, Majori Carter, when you came to Wesleyan, I was really, really inspired by what your speech that you gave about environment and growing up in New York. You know, it was really something that I was really touched about. But I wish I could be able to have those kind of people coming to Wesleyan often. And I say, this is the center. And I really see something like this going to be, if we want the future of our kids, the future of Wesleyan, to connect back. We have amazing, amazing people who are out there. They don't connect back, because there's no formalized thing that we have now. So it's the right time today, please. Let's work on this. And first thing first, now I think we need some money. Thank you.
Sasha?
In terms of concrete things, I would just add that if everybody here posted on Facebook and tweeted tonight saying, I'm proud that there's this new Center for Social Entrepreneurship, my aspiration for the center is to see it help to define and characterize Wesleyan as a university, so people looking at colleges can say, look at that place that supports social entrepreneurship. That's me. I connect to Wesleyan because of these values, and I want to go there. So I think it can help to further define who we are as a community and what Wesleyan stands for in a really powerful way.
I would ask everybody who's not in the room to join Wesleyan Alumni and Philanthropy and Public Service tonight. There's a LinkedIn subgroup. We have 855 people, and that's as good as tweeting. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't want to hog the mic, but I'm a rookie here. So give me the factoids. $100 equals
we're gonna do
what?
That. We're
so
gonna
give
do
me
that.
Give me
right
something
now.
That I can sell to my peers.
Okay, so wait, maybe this is a good time to bring Laura and Sarah up here.
Yes.
What we're trying to do is raise money for internships. So that our students can take on these projects, and then seed grants for the students who have great ideas, for workshops so that we can invite people back to campus to work with students in. They're not credit-bearing classes, but they can be workshops lasting from anywhere from an afternoon to several weeks that would to build skills and build capacity. We have great demand for this. So an internship might be $5,000 for a student to be able to go off in the summer, and they don't have to be paid by the not-for-profit organization they're working with, that we would give them a stipend so that they could take the internship rather than doing another kind of job. The workshops are everything from building a sustainable organization to finding your audience to marketing to identifying social problems. The best ones are the ones we get you to do for free. But many organizations will have to charge, because that's how they stay sustainable, and they can be anywhere from $2,500 to $10,000 depending on the length of the workshop. We need to grow this organically, this Patricelli Center for Social Entrepreneurship, by having around $50,000 or so a year for the next few years to get the critical mass of work underway. I want to say, before Laura comes up, I guess you're going to give us some more details about how we're going to do this. I want to say that as a university president, I hear a lot from parents and from alumni and of course the pundits who tell us that, you know, college isn't worth it, you don't need to go to university, or the other one, my other favorite, is that the liberal arts are dead, you know, that they're not practical, they're not meaningful. And then I come back to campus, and a campus now that has 10,000 applications every year for students who want to come to Wesleyan, who want the kind of liberal arts education that we've become famous for, and liberal arts education that prepares them to translate what they learn on campus to what they're going to do out in the world. And there's a bad reputation that of this generation of students have for among at least some quarters. People say, oh, well, you know, they're really only interested in making money, in narrow careers. And there was a small dip in that during the recession, but now that's back again. And I suppose if you go to Harvard, that's true. And there are other fancy places where maybe that remains the case. But when I go back to Wesleyan, I see students who are committed to learn, so they discover who they are. They discover what they love to do. Then they want to build their skills. They want to get better at it. But then they really want to share what they've done, what they're doing on campus, with what happens off campus. They want to take their education and teach in a inner city school. They want to start an organization that's going to deal with issues of poverty and social justice. They want to work with other people who are trying to figure out what they can do to make a difference about environmental degradation. They're inquisitive. They're scared. They have a sense of impatience and urgency. But they have ambition to make the world a better place. It's not unselfish. It's their world. But it is inspiring. And what we're trying to do now is give them some help. Give them some help so that they can help us make this world a better place. We're going to tell you a little bit about the mechanics of that. Laura, you're going to come.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay? Okay, great. It's a true honor to be here. I'm going to give you a tiny bit of background, and then I'm going to talk very concretely about the fundraising aspect, since it's come up in a beautiful way today. But in many ways, this is the collision of a few of my lives. I help run the organization called Equine Green that was mentioned a few times, which is basically it seeds social change organizations around the world. So we've actually been able to support these three. We've partnered with Open Society Foundation's The Campaign for Black Male Achievement around creating the Black Male Achievement Fellowship this year. And when I started working at Equine Green about 10 years ago, I just saw actually how many applicants we were getting from Wesleyan for our really competitive seed funding fellowship, where we only actually support 1% of our applicants. It's incredibly hard to get. So these are the 1% of our applicants. So when I was humbly asked by Kennedy and Jess and by Bob to join the advisory board of the Petrocelli Center, I was like, finally, that something is happening on the Wesleyan campus to harness all this stuff that was already happening in so many beautiful ways. But as everyone has said today, now there's an organizing force behind it. And the organizing force, as President Roth has talked about, is going to be working on a few different fronts. So yes, there's going to be internships, incredibly important, transformative for individuals to open their eyes and be able to get real work experience and then be able to poise themselves really well to be able to go and do what they want to do in changing the world. There's workshops and training sessions. So Sasha talked about how he went to campus. I went to campus as well. And Majora, also it sounds like you went to campus, probably not under the Petrocelli Center, but it wouldn't be unreasonable for you to go under the Petrocelli Center, and others here have so much to contribute coming back to campus and be able to teach students about what you know and different skills and workshops is really helpful. There's also training sessions right now for students who are working on how to the kind of mechanics of running organizations, so budgeting and marketing and really the nitty-gritty that's happening through a partnership with an organization called Starting Block. One thing that I'm particularly excited about just because of the work that I do, is this interest in creating a seed fund so that Wesleyan can seed more organizations like Refuge Point, like Shining Hope, and like so many others that I'm sure you guys are running, and provide that kind of first initial I believe in you dollars that are so hard to get, that are as much emotional as they are functional. And I think while we were launched with an incredible gift through Bob Petrocelli and his family, and we need more endowment gifts, we also need operating costs. And that's where this good information that hopefully you can contribute to can come in. So two things that are really key to know. One is that we've been really honored to receive a gift from Newman's Own Foundation. It is a $50,000 gift if the Wesleyan alum community can raise $100,000 by December 31st. So there's a sense of urgency around this, and we think we can definitely do it. And to add more fuel to that, we've also, there's an anonymous alum who has also, as of, I believe, very recently, decided to give a gift of up to $50,000 by gifts that are matched today. So this is just kind of happening today. So there is a double sense of urgency around people who can do whatever they can.
If I pledge $1,000 tonight, yes. Well, let's say $5,000 tonight, then this anonymous alumnus will also give $5,000.
Yes.
So like my gift becomes $10,000.
Yeah, it's matched up to.
And then the Newman's, that's I didn't get that far in math. So then the Newman's piece comes in, so it becomes. Becomes another $5,000.
Does that mean that a corporation that matches gifts would also be able to match?
If you have a corporation that will match, we'll take that pledge. Won't we? That's incredible. So that's five, from
so
5 to 15.
Could be 15.
That's right. 5,000 can be 15. It's almost like making money.
Yeah, there. It just to us, it just shows that there's a lot of. We're just getting started with the Petrocelli Center. Can I just point out Paul, who's standing right now in the back, who is the day-to-day operations around everything that happens at the Petrocelli Center. So I encourage people when during our networking time, when we're eating this good food that OSF has donated, that to talk to Paul and talk about what's actually happening on the ground and hearing about all the activities. I think would be inspiring for folks.
How can I make a pledge?
You
see that person in
yes.
the back there waving an iPad?
Michaela.
Michaela can actually not only take a pledge, lock the doors, she actually has a little device that will, you can even just swipe your credit card. So you just don't even have to think about it, right? And remember, if you make a pledge, it gets doubly matched tonight. And if so, a pledge is great, a credit card is better, Barbara Jane would say, right? Isn't that the train of thought? This is a great time to do it. It is emotional money.
Yeah.
I mean, it is emotional money. We want to know that this is a time when people are going to come to the support of the center. It is important for our sense of solidarity and our sense of urgency to have your support. And we need the money. We need the emotional support, and we need the practical support. So Michaela's back there. She will be taking mm-hmm. pledges and gifts.
And just to add, of course, gifts are really, really important, but also gifts of time and of knowledge are also incredibly welcome. I think Sarah Williams and I, who've been working together on with others on this event and other initiatives happening in San Francisco, really see this as a way to bring some alums back who haven't been in the Wesleyan fold, and that's one of our highest goals, is to kind of reconnect with people, because we have seen a little spark about how this topic of social innovation, social entrepreneurship, is something that a lot of us have in common, and tapping into that energy within Wesleyan, I think, could be just really, really powerful. Are there other questions from the group, to the panelists? Do you want to come up to the mic?
Good evening. My name is Marjorie Ramon Sanabria, Wesleyan class of 2012. I had the great privilege of listening to Kennedy's speech under the hot sun. It was indeed very good. My question was along the lines of someone brought up people in color and leadership and social change. The Teach for America initiative is, I think, one of the few initiatives we have to send people into underprivileged communities. But when speaking to like classmates and friends and roommates about the application process and then the actual process of teaching itself, there's a higher risk for things like burnout and getting discouraged. And because Wesleyan students are so impatient and eager to affect change, sometimes when that change doesn't help immediately, feelings of doubt can creep in, and then all of a sudden you go from a small committed organization to a larger program that cannot be as self-sustaining. But whenever I come back to Wesleyan or go to Wesleyan events, it's always inspiring to see people who are passionate and committed and are doing small incremental changes that will ultimately have a bigger impact. So my question is that for your future planning for like 2 years from now, 5 years from now, how do you see yourself staying small and passionate and effective and not getting so big where that you don't feel like, you don't feel more like a machine, or that you're plugging young idealistic people in and the result is not what you hoped for? Like, how do you keep that momentum going within your organizations?
And I think the reality of this work is that it's hard, and that, you know, every day it's hard. There's challenges, you know, big and small. And so I think that, you know, something we do that I think helps a lot is like we have meetings every week where we talk about one concrete thing that's happened in the week in Kibera that's changed. Maybe it's just one girl. It's one girl who we had last week, a girl, her house burned down, and our whole school community came together and helped her family in this time of crisis to rebuild their house. They had nothing, no clothes, no utensils, absolutely everything was burned. But these other girls, who are also living in extreme poverty, came together and said, I have a spoon. I have two t-shirts, I'll give you one. And so I think that sometimes, you know, it's a metaphor that was a really powerful experience of seeing this community come together. Is that solving all of the systemic problems that we're working on? No. But that, you know, you need both the big and the small, I think, to keep going.
Well, the one thing I would want to say is kind of want to dispel the myth that Teach for America is the only vehicle to work in communities of color. And I think one of the things that the center can do is be a connector and compile all of the amazing organizations across the country where students can forge a career path and can be, internships, places to match their passion and their issue area, because it's out there, and it doesn't have to be this national organization. There are so many local opportunities of social entrepreneurs and social organizations that we can plug our students into.
And it's a great question. How do you stay nimble and effective and grow at the same time? And I think a crux of the answer is in ideas. If you can create new ideas that have the ability to spread and take hold in places around the world, then you're starting to create very significant change. And just along the theme of ideas, I have one tonight. This is so exciting to be here and to be part of really the moving forward of this extraordinary center. I would love to see, I've already made my commitment, by the way. It wasn't tonight, it was a few days ago. I hope it can count towards the match. I would love to see, President Roth talked about a moral commitment here, financial, but also a moral commitment. I would love to see us have, and I maybe this is unprecedented, but 100% participation, whether or not it's just a little gift or a large gift. If everybody is morally committed to supporting Wesleyan and supporting this idea that we can move the Wesleyan community forward in this way, I'd love to see everybody support that collectively here.
Do you have any last words?
Okay, sorry. What I'm saying is that you have to think back sometimes that it's not about you. That's what I really, every time I try to be humble, to think about. The work that I'm doing is beyond Kennedy. It's not about me. It's about the work I'm doing, the people that I'm serving. And many people come in with the idea of being the head. We cannot be the leaders. All of us cannot be the leaders. And that's why I really love the idea of Patricelli Center, that is going to teach people to understand that you can bring your talent in something. I have a good example. I am not such detailed. Jessica, so stubborn and detailed. I'm not like that. But Aika, we kind of bring it together, and that become a force. So it's not about who is the leader. So many people go with the idea that they want to start something, they're going to be the star. Mm-mm. Is who can you work with and make a movement? It's all about a movement. In a movement, when the leader dies, the movement continues on. Mm-hmm. You get? So his idea, so Particelli Center will really bring this idea that, no, you don't. You can even work in a bank, but be socially responsible. You know, you can be a lawyer and be socially responsible. So I kind of love, that's why I really support the Particelli Center. Thank you.
Great, thank you. We actually have to close now. If I can encourage people who have questions to go talk to the individuals, but we want to basically create a little space. There's incredible people in the room, and we want to create the forum for you guys to talk to one another. So we have great food and drink over there, and so we just hope that you contribute. Michaela's over there, and that you get to know each other, try to meet five people you didn't know, and enjoy, and thank you again for coming, and thank you to the panelists and to OSF. Thank you.